Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Sixth Amendment Criminal Sentencing Restrictions Edition. Today our featured guest is former White House Special Counsel William Otis, discussing Oregon v. ICE, heard an oral argument on Tuesday, October 14th. Thanks for tuning in. In this case, the Supreme Court considers the extent of jury involvement in sentencing required by the Sixth Amendment. The case arises from the imposition of consecutive sentencing totaling 340 months by an Oregon judge following his determination that Thomas Eugene Ice's 6 convictions on 4 counts of molestation and 2 of burglary comprised several separate incidents. Under Oregon law, sentences for multiple crimes are served concurrently by default, unless a judge finds the crimes to have been part of different courses of action resulting in separate harms. On appeal, the Oregon Supreme Court read the Apprendi line of cases to preclude the consecutive sentences. The Supreme Court now considers whether Oregon's sentencing regime violates the Sixth Amendment because it authorizes the judge to impose consecutive sentences based on the sentencing judge's determination of a fact neither found by the jury nor admitted by the defendant. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. Otis.
On October 14th, the court heard oral argument in Oregon v. ICE, an interesting sentencing case that follows on Apprendi, Blakely, and Booker. The case concerns an Oregon statute that purports to tell judges when they may or may not impose consecutive sentences. The specific state statute says that sentences shall be concurrent unless the judge makes particular factual findings, in which case he can run them consecutively. The particular factual finding at issue here is whether when the defendant is convicted of more than one offense, the two offenses are basically part of the same continuing course of conduct. If they are, the sentence under Oregon law has to be concurrent. If they're not, and the judge makes a factual finding that they are not, they can be consecutive. The offense in this case was that the defendant, who was an apartment manager, came into the apartment rented by a lady and occupied by her 2 children, one of whom was an 11-year-old girl. On 2 different occasions, the manager came in and molested the girl. When the case went for sentencing in the state trial court, the state judge determined, as a matter of fact, that the 2 episodes were sufficiently different from one another that they did not qualify as part of the same continuing course of conduct, and he imposed consecutive sentences. That was affirmed by the lower state courts in Oregon, but overturned by the Oregon Supreme Court. The state of Oregon petitioned the United States Supreme Court to consider the case, which it could do because the Oregon Supreme Court had taken the view that the sentences were actually okay under Oregon state law, but that they ran afoul of the rule of Apprendi as interpreted in Blakely and Booker. The basic problem in the case, and this came out in oral argument, is whether the actual holding of Apprendi extends as far as its reasoning would seem to take it. The actual holding in Apprendi is this, quote, other than the fact of a prior conviction, any fact that increases the penalty for a crime beyond the prescribed statutory maximum must be submitted to a jury and proved beyond a reasonable doubt, unquote. Now, taken on its own terms, it would seem that the Oregon Supreme Court got this wrong. No one is claiming that the sentences at issue here are beyond the statutorily prescribed maximum for each crime of which the defendant was convicted. The claim is, instead, that they cannot be run consecutively because consecutive sentences, or the propriety of consecutive sentences, turn under this reading of Apprendi on a factual finding that the judge made about whether the crimes were part of the same course of conduct. And under the basic reasoning of Apprendi, when you have an addition to the defendant's punishment based on a factual finding. That finding has to be submitted to a jury and proved beyond a reasonable doubt. Now again, technically, that is not the case here, because this case does not concern, as Apprendi and as Apprendi's progeny do, particularly Blakely and Booker, this case does not concern the operation of determinant sentencing guidelines. And it was the problem with guidelines that vested so much discretion in sentencing courts as to how the sentences would be imposed and what they could actually turn out to be. It was that what in the Supreme Court's view was an excess of discretion that was inconsistent with the Sixth Amendment's guarantee of a jury trial to determine facts upon which the defendant's sentence could be based. But this case is a little different. This case does not concern the determinant sentencing system at issue in Blakely and Booker. It concerns something that has a far more well-established history, and that is judicial discretion to decide when a defendant sentence should be consecutive and when it should not be, when it should be concurrent. The underlying problem in the case is that the specific holding of Apprendi, that is, that when the sentence for a particular crime exceeds the statutory maximum, there has to be a jury determination, does not really apply here, because we're not talking about even an allegation that the sentence for a particular crime was enhanced beyond the statutorily prescribed maximum. So the specific holding, as stated by its own terms of Apprendi, would seem not to apply. The problem is that the logical engine of Apprendi certainly seems to apply, and this was the point made particularly by Justices Scalia and Souter in their questioning. The basic point of Apprendi, its underlying logic, is that when the defendant receives a sentence above the minimum to which he would otherwise be exposed, and that addition is based on facts, those facts have to be found by the jury under the Sixth Amendment. Well, here there is a fact, that being that the defendant's two episodes of molestation did not occur as part of the same underlying scheme, or basically occurred during the same offense, broadly viewed. That's a factual conclusion, and it was drawn by the judge. It was not submitted to a jury, and therefore the judge felt free under Oregon law to impose consecutive sentences. So what it boils down to is whether the court is going to apply the logic of Apprendi to consecutive sentencing schemes, of which there are approximately 13 in the United States, similar to that by Oregon, or whether it is going to confine Apprendi more to circumstances that fit Apprendi's actual wording. A lot is at stake in that, and not just because of consecutive sentences, but because the whole sentencing regime, as interpreted under the Sixth Amendment, is now at stake, as Justice Breyer, who seemed to be the only justice clearly on the side of the state of Oregon in this case, pointed out. There are many aspects of sentencing that have long and traditionally been undertaken by the court without jury involvement that could be overthrown here if the decision is made to apply Apprendi as broadly as Justice Scalia and Justice Souter certainly seem to want to do. That is, Justice Breyer pointed out, what about restitution? What about whether the defendant is going to be eligible for parole or for early release? There are many aspects, particularly in state sentencing. There's no longer any parole in the federal system, but some of the states retain parole, and whether eligibility will be something that the judge can declare at sentencing or not may be at stake here. It's difficult to tell from the Supreme Court's questioning where they're going to come down on this. It does seem that Justices Scalia and Souter are going to be on the side of the defendant and Justice Breyer on the side of the state. There was some indication in the questioning that Justices Ginsburg and Stevens, who were essential to the Blakely and Booker majorities, have some second thoughts here, perhaps based on the considerations raised by Justice Breyer, although it's not clear what they were doing. There is one aspect of the case that few have noted that may turn out to be the hook on which it's decided, and that was a question by Justice Stevens as to whether, even if there were error here, it was harmless error, because it's so plain that, given the separate episodes of molestation, that it was not part of the same crime, that it's clear beyond a reasonable doubt, which is the harmless error standard for questions like this, that it's clear beyond a reasonable doubt that a jury would have found the same thing that the judge found, and therefore that the judge would have been authorized in any event to impose consecutive sentences. The Supreme Court, I think, as a whole, does not want to take that out. I think the court is pretty determined to give some sort of indication as to how far the underlying logic of Apprendi is going to extend. If they do that, my guess is it won't be for the last time, because there will be additional disputes at present not foreseen as to how far we're going to take this. For example, one easy one to come up with is this. It is a considerable part of what has been judicial discretion in deciding sentences that where within the statutory range the defendant sentence will fall depends on the judge's view of the defendant's attitude, which shows up in court, which can show up with his interview with the probation officer, which influentially can show up in his rap sheet. There are any number of things that have not been submitted to the jury, have never been submitted to the jury, to my knowledge, concerning the defendant's attitude toward the law and toward his behavior, that are very important in sentencing, that have a very large role, and properly so, in determining what the sentence ought to be within the statutory maximum, yet would seem not to be amenable to a finding by a jury. I'm not aware of any case in which a jury has been asked to make an evaluation whether the defendant has a good attitude or a bad attitude. Nonetheless, Apprendi, taken to its logical endpoint, would seem to require that. We may get an idea from the decision here as to whether that's going to happen.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video from past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at federalistsociety.org/multimedia.